Hello, greetings, salutations, and all that other fun stuff, everyone. It's episode 153 of the Blind Bargains Cast. I'm Joe Steinkamp, and with me is, well, JJ's out, so that means that I have to go to Jamie Pauls. Hey, Jamie, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good to be here. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast.
You know, Shelly comes on when I'm not here. I think you've become the other side of the seesaw. I think this is how it's going to work, or the $100,000 pyramid, you know, so
when Shelly's gone. Because the seesaw thing was making me dizzy, so the pyramid thing works
better. I've been really bad with analogies lately. I was trying to explain to our teenager that when one of us wasn't in the family, you know, it wasn't a tricycle, it was a bicycle, and if it wasn't, you know, if it was only him, it'd be a unicycle. And then I realized that was really poor. That was really, really poor. I could do much, much better. But before we go much further, we're going to have on this very program Mr. David Bradburn from ZoomMax, and we're going to talk about video magnifiers. But more than that, we're going to talk about China and how blind friendly he found China. It is really interesting. And he'll talk about food he ate in China, because, you know, he is our resident food critic here at the BBQ. So yes, we have that to come up. And I mentioned that we had some fun times in the family. I got to hijack the news, or Shanghai the news. That would have been a better transition. Shanghai the news to actually mention some things on my own. I am super, super happy and proud and delighted to say that my fiance, Miss Ricky Enger, is now the new learning expert, one of the new learning experts over at Hadley. So wow. Hadley Institute is, she started on August 1st. And she'll be doing some all sorts of training and materials and just really cool stuff, and got a reason to drag her onto the program. So, ha, ha, ha.
Well, Ricky, they couldn't have anybody better over there, I'm saying.
I know. I mean, we've spoken on microphones with that lady for years. We know.
Many. Yes, we do.
Many, many.
So, we've been in meetings with that lady, and we know that she knows her stuff, man.
This just is saying. True. Oddly enough, she's done stuff for Hadley in the past, from former places we used to work. So I think that's even funnier. I just, sometimes taking that foot off the merry-go-round, like I said earlier this year, just crazy how it all works out. One of the other things that is wild about the news is that we've had on Greg a few times this year to talk about Aira. And Jamie, I don't think I've asked. Are you an explorer? Are you a subscriber of Aira?
I am not, and I've always said it's because I don't travel that much alone, but the more I hear people talk about Aira and the more I listen to interviews like that appear on this very podcast, the more excited I get about what you can do with it, basically. And, you know, one of these days I'm liable to take the plunge. I'm liable to join the bandwagon, man.
JJ is going to be hounding you for referral minutes. Ricky was already hounded, and that's how JJ has like minutes all the way practically to the end of the year. But one of the cool things is that JJ can use those minutes anytime he needs to, because the service went now live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no matter where you are on the planet. If you're being served by Aira, you will now have the opportunity to utilize those services. I spoke to Greg about this a little bit offline. He also wanted me to pass along that they've updated the Horizon Glasses FAQ. Several people are starting to get their glasses, and they have updated information about Horizon. I'll have a link in the show notes for this. So all sorts of crazy news still coming out of that little company in San Diego as we approach the fall. Who knows what else is going to come up? They are just cranking it out over there at Aira.
Yeah.
The other thing that you might have heard on Twitter and other social medias is that Microsoft is going to stop supporting the old Skype. And I'm sorry, that's Patrick's S word, as we all know, but I had to say it at least once for those who don't know the long-standing joke on programs that Jamie and I have hosted. So Skype is, and that'll be the last time I say it, will be gone as far as the older versions are concerned. Some screen readers have already started to post what this means. I have a link here in the show notes from Freedom Scientific about what you need to know about the older Skype retire. Oh, I did it again. Oh no, once when you, it's like Monty Python. It's like, I can't stop saying the word. Dolphin has also said that don't upgrade. Yeah. Hold on to the old version of that as long as you possibly can. And of course, Narrator, you know, works in NVDA, already has add-ons out there, additional scripts for these kinds of things. But if your primary screen reader is JAWS or Dolphin, you probably need to read these resources before you consider moving on to the new Skype.
I haven't played with that yet. I haven't used Skype for a really long time. Sometimes, well, I've had a love-hate relationship with it, especially on my iPhone. I've always thought it could be a little easier to use, but I keep seeing accessibility improvements mentioned, and I feel like maybe one of these days when I don't really have... probably when I don't have a reason to use Skype, I will play with Skype. That way I'm not, you know, scrambling at the last minute.
A burden that you're under some type of time crunch to learn a whole bunch of keystrokes or...
Oh, right, I won't break out into a cold sweat. Yeah.
How do I add people to a call again?
You just don't.
That's you take care of that way. You reboot. Walk away.
Right.
Some people may feel that way with the ending of Twitter, as you also may have heard on Twitter. Certain things have been happening, and the streaming API is going away. And what does that mean? Well, that means that some old clients might not work as well. And some people have come out, like Q over at Chicken Nugget, saying the back up your keys, because if you don't and you try to reinstall, that won't happen. And the support ends as far as that's concerned from accessible apps. And he's been very public in saying those kinds of things. But someone who has also been very public in saying that the apocalypse, the Twitpocalypse, is not necessarily nigh, Brian Hartchin has a open tween course over at Hartchin Consultancy. And he's made that available. So if you are thinking about staying on Twitter and wanting to use something that feels familiar, then definitely check this out. As Patrick says, he's been using OpenTween for a long time and he's been happy with it. And Brian had so many people asking him about it, he just turned it into a course. So also, while you're there, go ahead and look at all the stuff that's going on at Hartchin Consultancy. As you remember, we had a conversation back in June about some of the things that Brian has going on. A lot of those things are now available and online. So definitely go over there and take a look. And maybe somebody could come up with a social media challenger to Twitter. And maybe that person could win a Holman Prize. What do you think, Jamie?
That sounds like a good thing. I think so, too. I like that a lot. Yeah.
One of the Holman Prize winners actually does have an idea about having a travel site, kind of like Yelp or Google Maps, and that it would specifically mention things that blind and low vision travelers would want to know about. One of the things that I do in Google Maps is I actually do reviews and I talk about the lighting of the room or if it's a bright or dark place. And one of my reviews had 100 likes already, just because I was so descriptive in what the layout looked like. So that was really kind of wild. I wasn't expecting that. So talking about things about, you know, curb cuts and where there are ramps and, you know, are there lights at the front of the restaurant that are shining down in your face right when you walk in? Or is it really loud music and hardwood floors, so it's like a gigantic bombastic echo chamber? These are all things that would really help. And that's just what one of the Holman Prize winners wants to do, is to make something that's very accessible and understanding all of that. Another one, and I will not be replicating this, Jamie, and I think you might join me on this stance, blind triathlon. Gentleman wants to... wants to take on the triathlon. And if you don't know what that is, it is biking and running and swimming. All the things that I enjoy watching from my couch during the Olympics.
I was going to say, I think heart attacks are accessible to blind and sighted alike. And I suspect
I would imagine
that would not be good. I would not like that.
My Apple Watch says that my heart rate is highly elevated for this time of day.
Yes. For an unusually long time.
Yeah. That was just me walking onto the course and going, oh no. So you can find out more about the winners of the Holman Prize and also a great article that talks about what the past winners from 2017 are doing, kind of an update of where they are. That's a link from the San Francisco Lighthouse, which is available in the show notes over at blindbargains.com. Staying on the topic of awards, it looks like the guys over at Be My Eyes keep racking them in. Google Play winners, now Tech for All, or Tech for Good. Tech for Good, yes. Mm-hmm. Tech for Good. Tech for All. That's a whole other story.
There you go.
So the Tech for Good awards. Among them were like Seeing Eye was going for it, and Envision AI, and a couple others. But Be My Eyes, man, racking them up left and right, getting those trophy cases full of amazing accolades. And this is just amazing. So good for those guys over at Be My Eyes here, getting a lot of recognition all within a short amount of time. Have you used this app lately, Jamie?
I haven't actually, but I love knowing that it's there and I'm liable to one of these days. I have a friend, interestingly, who's sighted, and she's a volunteer, and she actually signed up early when it first happened. And it took her a long time to get someone to connect with her, but she really enjoys doing it from her perspective. And I think it would be cool if I could actually connect to her sometime, but.
That would be funny.
Anyway,
wait a minute.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
is that, totally. Jamie, is that you?
What? Is that really you?
Hi.
Yes, it is. Yes. You just texted me. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well, maybe.
Yeah, that would have worked. FaceTime.
FaceTime.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. But I was trying to do something that was a bit embarrassing, and this would be more anonymous until now.
Right.
So the
that's
one
a,
time.
I thought of that. That's a great point right there.
Yeah. That's one of those that's going to be built on some kind of a premise for some screwball comedy in the future. I'm just saying. There are things, though, that I know that you have been playing with, and some of that might be over in the new, and I mean new by it is August 1st at the time we record this, but new the new Access World is now online. Jamie, do you have anything in the July issue?
I do, as a matter of fact. I took the plunge, bit the dirt, bit the bullet, rather, I guess. Anyway, I played with Pinterest a while. My wife has been a huge Pinterest fan for a really long time. And so when they announced some accessibility improvements, I thought, well, cool, why not? You know, I've decided some things are just inherently visual, and they're just going to be inherently visual. I'm not saying it's not usable. I couldn't quite get into it, honestly. Because, yeah. I mean, her excitement is like, it's like a new magazine every time you refresh the page. Yeah, I know. My screen reader gets lost every time the page refreshes. I have to start over.
Yeah, it is. Look, another one just landed on my doorstep. Yay.
Uh-huh. Wow.
New issue. Wow. It is fascinating. I've had a conversation with a couple of people offline about resources. The MSU course I taught earlier this year, they're still going on and just about to wrap up. And the conversation they were having about resources was fascinating. And at the same time, the things I would have recommended 5 years ago, 10 years ago, aren't the same. You know, it used to be mailing lists and the like, but now information is becoming more siloed, way more than just who knows it. It becomes the platform of choice. You know, maybe somebody's doing something on Instagram. Maybe somebody's doing something on Pinterest. Maybe somebody's just doing Facebook Live. Right. You know, my preferred is Twitter because it's a simple broadcasting medium.
Me too.
But it is crazy because some of the people within these circles who are definitely cited go to these more visual platforms and have conversations. So it's important for us to know that they exist, and it's, you know, sometimes a nugget of knowledge might be there that we need, but man, oh man, is it like pulling teeth to be able to find that little nugget of knowledge that might be between those teeth. See, I told you my analogies are not good this day. Just not happening. So definitely check out Jamie's article and all the other great stuff that's over in the July issue of Access World. And coming up right after this little sounder that Patrick will drop in a moment, we will hear an interview with David Bradburn. And yes, it is about video magnifiers, but no, it isn't all about video magnifiers. We actually get into some really neat conversations about travel and blindness that I think you'll find interesting. But I will say that I wouldn't eat dinner, or I wouldn't think about eating Chinese food for a little while after you hear this, but just wait. You hear what I'll just roll the interview, Patrick. All right, everyone, we're back, and I have to start off this interview by an apology to my good friend David Bradburn, because we recorded an amazing interview back in San Diego, but Ricky, David, and I are the only ones who actually heard what transpired, because I bought a new recorder and then had the gain set to zero and recorded some of the best silence I've ever recorded in 8 years of podcasting. So, David, my apologies. But the good news is that David is back, and some of the things he would have talked about that we're going to ship are now actually shipping or about to ship. So this is actually a good time to have you on the program. David, welcome back to Blind Bargains.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure. And, you know, your listeners did miss out on all of our forecasting as to who was going to win the World Cup, among other prophecies. Everyone missed out.
We were almost perfect, too, on who survived Avengers 3. I mean, just it was amazing.
Seriously.
Prognostication. Seriously. Yep.
Exactly. Crazy. Yes. So anyway, they've missed out on that, but I'm happy to be back. And Thanks for the opportunity.
David is with Zoomax, and there is a lot of things going on. You might have heard names such as Snow, Butterfly, and others. This is an opportunity for those of you who are not familiar with some of the products to get to know a little bit of what's going on. And of course, we're going to talk about wearables, and we're going to talk about some of the things that are in the portable landscape. David, where do we want to go on first? There's a bigger presence now for Zoomax in the USA, isn't there?
It's absolutely right, Joe. So Zoomax, in terms of, just a very brief company history, first and foremost, everyone should know that Zoomax is the largest manufacturer of assistive technology in China. They're actually based in the city of Hangzhou. And Hangzhou is probably the largest city you've never heard of, because truly, until I visited there earlier this year, I'd never heard of this place. But it's a beautiful city. It's a very high-tech city. Alibaba, which is the Chinese equivalent of Amazon, is headquartered there. And there's a lot of kind of startup companies, a very kind of young, energetic vibe to the city, I would say. And that's where Zoomax has been headquartered since 2011. But to your point, they established a new subsidiary called Zoomax USA. That's the company I actually am employed by. And we're based near Boston, Massachusetts.
So familiar stomping grounds for you, if I remember correctly. So you didn't have to uproot, or how is your Cantonese?
My Cantonese probably extends to the correct pronunciation of Hangzhou, which is the city where Zoomax is based. And other than possibly ordering some dishes by the correct name when I'm in a restaurant, that's about as far as it goes. Don't rely on me as a Cantonese-speaking tour guide. I don't think it would help you either, because I believe the language spoken would be Mandarin. So Cantonese is distinctly different. And as I was to learn, again, I did get to visit the office in China earlier this year. There are so many dialects in China that they have to speak Mandarin as the language that everyone speaks. But the fact is, if they all spoke using the dialect of the province or state where they're from, they wouldn't understand each other. The languages are that different.
That is very much like science fiction, where there was always the different worlds that spoke their own languages, but there was a universal basic that everybody could agree upon. That's fascinating.
Indeed.
But getting away from this, because I do want to come back to this, because I'm fascinated by it. But at the same time, I'm fascinated to learn more about some of the things that are coming out. You were speaking to me before we started recording about a 10-inch portable that it's about to, or is shipping?
It is, actually. Yes. So the product, Joe, is called Snow 10 Pro. It's actually the largest handheld magnifier that Zoomax has introduced. And when we were at CSUN together, we were actually showing it there for the very first time. It wasn't quite shipping. It began shipping about 6 weeks ago, and actually it's kind of made a lot of friends since then. Some of the things people like about it, one is that if you are someone who has used a desktop CCTV magnifier in the past, or even a handheld unit, you'll know that the kind of the plus and minuses of all of these things is that desktops have a bigger screen, which can be good, but they're big and heavy. The handhelds, on the other hand, can sometimes feature a small screen, which makes them portable, but because the screen's small, you can't see very much, at least if you're using a large magnification. So Snow 10 Pro, the way we position it at least, is to say it's kind of this nice kind of midpoint between desktop systems with screens of, say, 19 inches or more, and the handhelds, which can be anywhere from 3.5 to 7 inches in size. So that extra size really makes a difference. The other thing, and this is unique to Snow 10 Pro among all handheld units anywhere in the world, is that it is compatible with accessible instructional materials or curriculum for school use. So the storage in this device, several gigabyte, and you can actually take PDF copies of textbooks or indeed any reading material, copy them into the Snow 10 Pro, either through a USB memory stick or by connecting to a Windows computer, And once you've got the documents there, you just open them to magnify them, or if you want, use the OCR and speech function in Snow 10 Pro and convert them into speech, at which point words are highlighted as they are spoken.
What kind of synthesis are we talking about for those who are into that kind of thing?
I don't actually know. I mean, I don't think it's any of the ones that people would recognize from any of the currently available screen reading programs, but it is very, very clear, if I may say so myself, after the length of time I've worked in this industry. I should point out, though, that there are 20 languages in there. So there's OCR and speech for 20 languages. So it's English plus 19 others, including, in case you're interested, Russian, Chinese. There's even Turkish there, in case you fancy that. And there are male and female voices for, I believe it's 6 of those languages. I believe they're all European. And all the other languages only have a male voice.
That is interesting. I find it fascinating that, especially next year when we get into CSUN and Anaheim, that we might see more of an international presence. And I think we take for granted sometimes in the States how Western-driven assistive technology has been until we come across something like this, which is looking at it from a more global scale.
Indeed. Well, and it's not by accident, to be honest. You know, ZoomX is represented in 60 countries around the world. So the demand for these other languages has come probably more so internationally than here. So, you know, you're right about that. But nevertheless, there are plenty of people out in the world, maybe not so many here in the US or in the UK, where I'm originally from, for that matter, but that speak more than one language. But where people do, it's great that they can just kind of very quickly and easily switch from English to their first language or any other that they happen to speak.
As an aside, does that mean that the international plugs are available or within the box for some of these units, or is that an additional purchase if you were going to travel outside the United States?
For someone buying a unit well, let me put it this way. When you buy a ZoomX product, it is shipped with the plug style for the country that you are in. I know some other companies, certainly in the past, have provided international plug attachments in case you travel. You'd have to buy the adapter in this case. And it's just the conventional two-prong adapter for all of our handhelds except for Snow 10. Snow 10 has a three-prong, almost like a computer laptop type setup. And the reason for that is that unlike the other handhelds, the Snow 10 features fast charging. It can charge the battery fully in 2 hours flat. The other ones take about 4 to 4.5 hours to charge, and they're using an AC adapter. So in any event, if you were going to travel, just simply buy any international plug adapter and you'd be all set.
Does the Snow 10 have all the traditional color filtering options, lines, and we have an HDMI out?
Yes. So yes to all of the above. Yes, indeed. Like any handheld magnifier, Snow 10 allows you to change colors. So you have natural color, which means that whatever the colors are present in whatever it is you're looking at, that's what you're going to see on the screen. And then we have 10 high contrast combinations. So you're probably familiar with some of the standard ones like white on black, black on white, but there's also black with yellow, blue with white, that sort of thing. There is a camera button, so you can take photographs of up to 1,000 images and store them inside the Snow 10. You can also transfer those images to a computer if you want. There is the OCR and speech, as I mentioned. If you do use the OCR to recognize some text, you also have the option of saving the text as an RTF document. So if you want to export the OCR results to a computer, you can do that. You can also save things as a JPEG or a PDF image file, entirely up to you. There is an HDMI port and a USB port on the left side of the device, and the device comes with both of those cables, so you're all ready to go. There is a three-way camera on the Snow 10. So when you have the device, there's a kind of a support stand that's flush with the unit. You've opened that stand so that the magnifier sits at approximately a 45-degree angle. When you do that, the device is automatically in what they call normal viewing mode. That is, you're going to be trying to read things and magnify them on the screen. If you close the support stand, the device will go into distance viewing mode, at which point the camera, which is electronically driven, will actually rotate in place. So you don't actually feel anything moving. It's all self-contained inside the frame of the unit. But the camera changes direction so that now when you are holding the device, the camera is looking straight ahead of you to then look at whatever you're pointing at. Finally, and you have to access this by going through a menu, there is a selfie mode where the camera will rotate around to look at the person holding the device. And now you can use this as a magnified mirror and look at yourself, you know, obviously magnified. So if women are applying makeup or men are just checking their complexion after shaving, make sure they got everything okay. That's exactly what you could use that for.
Right. And we don't call that the vanity mode. I remember us talking about that.
That's a nice idea. San Diego. Yeah, we'll think about that if we get tired of the selfie mode.
That's correct. No, that makes perfect sense. So that's a good idea about what's happening with the snow. That isn't all that's going on. You have some big news coming up just in the middle of this month, a new release.
Yeah, so one of the things that ZoomX has been working on for about the past 2 years now, and they informed me about when I was coming on board to join them, is that they have been developing 3 new wearable devices. So some of your listeners may be familiar, and maybe you've reported on this before, on some of the other wearable devices in the world, like the Orcam glasses or the Iris Vision. So there are some very distinct segments of the wearable device market. So a device like Orcam, the MyEye, doesn't have a display. It uses text recognition, among other things, with speech output. You wear this little camera device on the edge of your glasses, and that positions a small little headpiece or earpiece close to you, to the opening of your ear. And I've tried it before. It actually works very, very well. You will hear what it's saying to you, but no one around you will. It's really quite cool. Then the other types of devices, the ones that you wear to kind of magnify things, are also commonly known as VR devices, VR for virtual reality. And if anyone is unfamiliar with that, this is basically a kind of a mask that you wear that straps around your head. A phone is attached to the front of that mask, and it acts as both the camera looking outward at whatever you're looking at, and then the screen is obviously facing in the direction of your eyes to show whatever you're looking at. And then there are different controls and gestures and so forth that you perform with those units to make the display bigger and smaller and so on. The product that we have developed, or the first of the three, because we're only introducing the first one in August, is called RevoSight. Revo like revolutionary, sight like seeing. So RevoSight. Our RevoSight device actually features augmented reality technology, AR. So our AR glasses are different in a couple of major ways. The first is that we are not totally enclosed when you wear this device. So it straps around your head, and it basically has these two small hanging displays. The displays are about 1.5 inches wide by about 1 inch tall. It's kind of widescreen dimensions, but miniaturized. And you have adjustments to make sure these are lined up exactly with the center of your eye, or at least where you view. And it gives the impression when you're wearing our device that when you look at anything, it appears that you're standing about 5 feet in front of a 55-inch television screen. So if you think about how much information you can fit on a 10-inch display or even a 25-inch display, and now expand that out to a 55-inch display, I think you get the general idea that, you know, you can start to display a lot of information in a very small amount of space. So that's huge for a couple of reasons. So the first is that one of the things that people report is that when they use the VR glasses type technology, that they feel a little bit nauseous. And it's because it's completely enclosed. You don't have access to any of your peripheral vision, assuming you have any in the first place. But the other reason that causes that kind of the feeling of nausea is that display rates on all the other kind of viewable wearable devices is not that fast. And if you don't know what display rate and refresh rate mean, it's the speed at which your device can kind of repaint the screen essentially as you've got movement. So it's very important when you're playing video games. It's also very important when you're watching television. The display rate and the refresh rate on the RevoSight are faster than all other wearable devices in the world. And the advantage of that is that you can be wearing RevoSight and move your head around to look around the room or whatever you're doing, and you will not notice any jerkiness in the display. It's going to keep up with you all the time, Whereas if you were using the VR display, you might move your head even just an inch, and then all of a sudden, a fraction of a second later, the display refreshes and updates to what you're now looking at. And that's what kind of those things that kind of cause people to feel a little bit, you know, giddy or dizzy. So that doesn't happen. The other thing about the RevoSight is that it features a extremely large field of view, 45 degrees, in fact. When I was at CSUN, Joe, we were actually showing the RevoSight for the first time, and we had a gentleman come to the booth who has retinitis pigmentosa, and he told me that he has a 5-degree field of view and said that because his field of view was so limited, he was disqualified as a potential customer for some of the other solutions. So we put RevoSight, I actually didn't know if it was going to work or not, to be honest with you at the time, but we put RevoSight on this person, and for the first time in his life, and this is, I mean, I'm 52, this guy was older than I am, and he said that for the first time in his life, he could see an entire face. Prior to that, because of his limited field of view, all he could see would be maybe my nose or my eye or wherever he happened to be focused on. Now, all of a sudden, he could see everything. So that was huge for him. We've also had people who have, you know, other conditions that cause them to be kind of, you know, totally colorblind and so on. And so they were also able to use the RevoSight, not least because one of the things that our product features is something called outlining. And what outlining basically means, so if you imagine the three-dimensional world that we all live in, the RevoSight is able to distinguish depth and dimensions of things in terms of how far away they are so that it can see that an object is perhaps closer than something that's behind it. And what it will do is actually draw a black outline or a white if you're using an inverted contrast. And it will draw these lines around so you can actually kind of see that thing even if you can't distinguish the colors. So that's helpful, both because when you're looking at objects, but also if you're walking along and you see the opening of a door frame or you see the steps on a staircase, RevoSight's going to be able to help you in many cases to actually identify where those things are.
Kind of like comic books and the way things are drawn around them.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty cool. The other thing that RevoSight will feature, I say will because it doesn't exactly today, but this is just a month or two away. It's just a software upgrade, is that we've also developed a mode for people with scotoma or tunnel vision. And so what this means is if we actually detect or the system detects that there are actually areas of the retina that are damaged or just not functioning at all, we're able to take the things that you can't see in that area of your field of vision and move it to an area where you can see it. The advantage of that sort of function is that you then don't have this issue, and I've seen this happen, where people are turning their head sideways to kind of look at you cross-eyed, so to speak, so that they're using their peripheral vision. So we think that will be very popular as well. And then the final thing that I would say about the RevoSight that we will be shipping this month is that it's the first in the world to feature what we call a floating reading mode. So when you are looking at text, it actually appears to float in front of you, almost like a heads-up display, I guess we might say. But the other thing then related to this is another very exciting feature, in my opinion, which is called targeted find mode. So if you have low vision and you're using a magnification device, and especially if what you're trying to look at is a very large document, let's say it's the front page of USA Today, trying to find your way or navigate your way around that page, if you're looking at something at, let's say, 12x or 15x or something like that, is difficult. Well, with our targeted find mode, what happens is on the little remote that comes with the RevoSight, you press and hold the find button. And when you do that, the RevoSight basically, it's taken a picture of whatever it is you're looking at. It kind of zooms out so that you can see the outside edges of the document that you're attempting to read. And you then see a red rectangle in the middle of the image, and that's your target. If you move your head as if you were using a mouse to move this kind of cursor, if you will, around the screen, the image in terms of the photograph actually stays wherever it was. What moves, and it's the only thing that moves, is the targeting window. And so let's say that you were looking for something in the lower right corner, you'd move the target to that area. And when you get to an area where you more or less think you need to be, you release the find button on the remote and it instantly zooms in at the point of focus at the point that you let go. So for kind of finding your way around documents, it's going to be truly terrific. So very excited about that.
kind of an app reader or doc reader from Zoom Text for video magnifier in a way.
That's a great
point.
Because
that's what you're essentially doing.
I hadn't considered that. But yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah. Well, and getting back to what we were saying a second ago about refresh rates and stuff, since I used to sell home theater back in the day, I used to call it the Etch-a-Sketch effect, where it just could not draw an image fast enough. And, you know, that was the early days of projection and high definition television. If you wanted to see this in action, you would go when there was a soccer or a football match or something like auto racing on television, because that was a great way to get people to understand just how fast these things can move and how at the time the technology couldn't draw it very fast. And there were some people who took those early video magnifiers that were head mounted and tried to watch television with them and had to find out about scan lines and all of those things. So right. It's interesting how fast it's changed over the years, and that more of these things can come into play, because the human eye operates way different than a camera. And we tend to forget that until we put a camera on the human eye.
Yes, right. Precisely. Yeah, no, you're totally right.
Well, that's an idea of how that's coming along. How is the battery situation? Is that a connected battery? Is that something you wear on your belt? Or
So the battery, which, by the way, works for more than 10 hours on a full charge for the Revo site, is actually contained within a small handheld remote. And the handheld remote is attached via a very thin, discrete cable. Think the thickness of kind of like the the headphone cable, you know, that runs between an iPhone and your headphones, sort of thing. Except I believe the color of the wire in our case is black. And so it draws its power from there, and that's what you charge. But you could certainly, if you were using this in the workplace or at school, you could be wearing RevoSight all day. With more than 10 hours of work time. So clearly, if you go to lunch and, you know, it's a place that you know, and you don't need to use RevoSight to read the menu or something like that, you could obviously be charging something during the lunchtime period and obviously start using it again after lunch and probably get an even longer day of use from it.
Is the camera in the center, like on the bridge of the nose?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that way you just remember your central vision rather than having to think of something on board the side of your head or something to that effect.
Yeah, yes. It's, right. Okay. So I have worn and tried the RevoSight several times, and even though I have sight, and I should point out, by the way, anyone that wears prescription glasses of any description, there's enough space when you wear RevoSight that we encourage you, if not require, that you continue wearing your prescription glasses. You don't take those off. So you keep your glasses on. In just the same way that, we've got folks that, are using prescription sunglasses. I mean, you could wear those also. I have used the RevoSight outside. We have been experimenting with various levels of tint for the visor, which would allow the RevoSight to be used under extremely bright conditions. What I've noticed, and I don't think this is any different than any other wearable, to be honest. You know, I've been at an outdoor restaurant. In fact, I used it at CSUN, Joe, at one of the restaurants close to the conference hotel there. And I was using it to study the menu. Now, that worked fine because I was in a shaded area of the outdoors. I think if I was in full sunlight, it might have washed out a little bit. But we are working on ways with tinting, like I said, to try and improve that.
The good news, and I mean this very jokingly, is that most eye conditions usually have the same problem as the camera. So it's not like it's right. Something you would do very quickly. And that's been a traditional issue that goes all the way back to the Geordie. I mean, yes. That's just one of those things that you have to be careful of. So with the battery life and the widescreen, which is interesting because all the previous ones until not too long ago were square more than widescreen. I love the concept because, again, some eye conditions, like you were stating earlier, mine with glaucoma, I have a tendency with nystagmus to be all over the place. But
yes.
As you were mentioning with RP and others, there is kind of an idea that they can see a square model of television better than a widescreen and vice versa, because it's where their vision is kind of always going to be focused because right. of the condition, right? Mm-hmm. So these things are shipping now. We haven't mentioned prices up, so I think this is a good point in which we should.
Sure. Well, let's just deal with the handheld magnifiers first. Just to let your listeners know that we actually manufacture five different handheld devices ranging in price from $199 at the entry level for the Butterfly with a 3.5-inch screen. In the middle of the range, we have the M5 HD Plus at $679. It's a high-definition handheld device with distance viewing with a 5-inch widescreen display. And then the Snow 7 HD Plus and the Snow 10 Pro are available with and without OCR and speech. And so the Snow 7 comes in at $879 without OCR and speech and $979 with. And the Snow 10 Pro comes in at $1,299 without OCR and speech and $1,499 with. And as with all ZoomX products, the products are covered by a 2-year factory warranty. We actually do have a service center in Bakersfield, California, and another one in one of the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia. So depending on where people are in the country, we've got two centers to help support people with that.
And free updates to the software? Or
occasionally there have been some. And actually updating the software with a ZoomX product is very easy. It's a file that you copy to the device. So I recently updated the Snow 10 Pro when it first came out. I had a pre-production model, which was using all the software. And all that I did was, there is a little program. I say a little, it's a program that we downloaded to kind of, you know, do this installation. It asks where the update file is. I point to the desktop so it knows where to find it. It says, okay, ready to go. And 2 minutes, I don't think it was even 2 minutes later, the device was fully updated and I was ready to go. The other thing, in terms of things that are easy to do for updating, occasionally we get people that say, I don't need OCR and speech. I'm going to buy the version of Snow 7 or Snow 10 without. And then later they change their mind. Perfectly fine with us. All that happens is we just charge you the difference. There's no penalty. So, you know, feel free. But we just charge you the difference. And once that's been paid, we send you a QR code that is unique to the serial number of the device that you own. So it won't work for anybody else but you. And it will actually unlock the OCR and speech functionality on your device.
That is wild.
Yeah,
that is
pretty cool, isn't it?
We've come a long way from buying modules from Humanware and sticking them in the back of Extend units. So there's a history lesson for those of you out there in video magnifier land. Right. Wow. Okay, so there's that. Any prices on Revo yet? We haven't mentioned that.
So Revo Sight's price has not yet been finalized. It should be finalized by the end of this week. So I don't want to go and speculate on this platform to kind of say, well, I think it's going to be X and then find that it's Y.
I think that's very wise.
Yes, but suffice to say that once that information is known, it will be, as it is for all of our other products. Price is always on our website for all of our products. It's not hidden. So if anyone goes to zoomaxusa.com, I'll repeat that information at the end of the interview, and looks under the wearable device page to find RevoSight, they will be able to find all the information about the price and things like that.
And we will always have a link in the show notes for this particular episode under the interview section. So if you're not sure, you can always go back to blindbargains.com and head on down to episode 153 to find these links that we're talking about in this interview. Let's see how interesting it must have been to go straight from San Diego to China and walk around in a totally different place. You were posting pictures on Facebook. They were gorgeous, by the way.
Thank you.
How blind friendly is China? Did you see Braille? Did you find a lot of people? Did you see other blind people? I'm just curious.
Right. So all great questions. Well, first of all, so your listeners should know that this was my second visit to China, although not with ZoomX. It was my first time with them. The first time I went to China was to go to Beijing, which is in the northern part of the country. And I am also of the impression that Beijing trades places with Mexico City as being the most populated city in the world. Beijing is massive. There must be three outer ring roads in terms of major highways that circle the city, and it is a nightmare to get around. Huge, huge, huge place. Hangzhou, on the other hand, is in the south. And for anyone who knows their Chinese geography, if you know where Shanghai is in the southeastern part of the country, if you fly to Shanghai, as I did, and then take another plane and fly about 2 hours to the west, you will get to the beautiful city of Hangzhou. I say beautiful, it truly is a beautiful city. Hangzhou, I mentioned at the beginning, is probably the largest city you've never heard of. Its population about 8-9 years ago was only 2 million people. Today, it's about 9.5 million. And I'm sure that that has happened in part because Hangzhou has a lot of high-tech companies there. I mentioned before that Alibaba, which is the Amazon.com equivalent in China, is headquartered in Hangzhou. And there are lots of other high-tech companies besides Zumax. The city itself, did I see many other people who are blind? I only saw one person, I think, that was blind, and they were in a restaurant not doing anything other than eating, just like the rest of us. So I can't say that I noticed anything untoward. So yeah, so I mean, in terms of kind of blind friendly, the city is, at least the section of the city that we were in, is quite modern. They do have, you know, things like, you know, kind of curb cuts, and they have patterns on the pavement so that you, you know, if you are kind of walking along, you'll know that you're on the straight, safe and narrow part of the pavement, and then it changes as you get to the edges of the path. I don't know how much fun that is for someone in a wheelchair, but for someone with a visual impairment, I think you'd be great. We did notice Braille buttons on things like elevators. So I don't know whether that's an international standard that all elevator manufacturers meet these days without being asked, but I did notice that. Beyond that, my biggest single observation of China, at least of Hangzhou, was the distinct absence of money. And by that, I mean cash money. Like, I never saw a single note or coin of the Chinese currency. Everyone was using their iPhone or Android phone to pay with Alipay. And basically, everyone has their bank account linked to Alibaba's site. And it's kind of like using PayPal or Apple Pay or something like that, that you simply, you know, you go into a store, and when the time comes, they've got these QR codes absolutely everywhere, Joe. You go into a restaurant, there's a QR code on the edge of your table. You scan the QR code, up comes a menu for the restaurant that you're in. I didn't try it with VoiceOver, but it didn't look inaccessible to me. I mean, I think if you had VoiceOver switched on and was swiping left or right, you'd hear everything just fine. And you place all your orders, and then you click send, and 10 minutes later, an efficient-looking waitress or waiter will come with your meal, deliver it to you, and during the course of the evening, you'll just continue to kind of add things as you want them. And when you're done at the end of the evening, you go ahead and say, I'm done here, and you click the pay button, and your meal experience is over. You don't have to worry about signing anything, which obviously if you're blind, I mean, I have plenty of friends who are blind that can sign their name, no issue. But if we didn't have to sign our name, it would be a lot better preference, I would say, because it's just quicker and easier. So in that respect, it was very, very good. The one thing that blew my mind was the food. So as, well, Joe, you probably know, you know me well enough to know that I pretty much am not fussy, right? I mean, I'll eat pretty much anything. So when I arrived in China on day one, I had colleagues from Zumax China with me on the plane. And they said, listen, when we clear customs, we're going to get through quicker than you because obviously we're Chinese citizens and you're not. They said, but we're going to go to this restaurant. And they wrote it down in Chinese and sent it to me in a text message so I could show this to other people because, of course, I couldn't pronounce it. I find them in the restaurant. They're all kind of munching away on breakfast or whatever it was. Looked like kind of dim sum type dishes, right? If you've ever been to a Chinese restaurant on a Sunday morning, you'll know what that means. And I see something on a plate and they said, oh, you got to try this. This is really good. I said, what is it? They said, it's probably best you don't ask. I said, come on, just tell me what it is. I said, is it chicken feet? It looked like chicken feet. They said, it is chicken feet. I said, I'll try it. So I tried the chicken feet. And actually, if you've ever enjoyed a chicken wing, I don't know that a chicken foot tastes much different. Just a little bit bonier is all, but it's chicken. It tastes the same. So I told them at that point, my hosts, I said, look, I promise that I'll try everything once. I can't promise that I'll try it a second time because maybe I won't like it, but I will try anything. So don't ask me again. Just order whatever you want anytime in the future. And for the next week, that's exactly what we did. And I got to say, I probably ate at least half a dozen things that if I had known what they were ahead of time and I wasn't with the Chinese, I would have been a flat no. This is not happening, you know. And I think the only time where I have to say I kind of drew the line and definitely said, yes, I'm not ever going to do that again in my life probably, was when I was presented with duck foot on a skewer. And the duck foot is prepared in such a way that they remove the outer, I don't want to say shell, it's not really shell, but the outer skin or whatever it is that kind of covers a duck's foot. And then what remains underneath that which is basically like this kind of muscly piece of meat, I suppose you'd call it. It's white in color and it's on the skewer. And so the skewer is kind of has been marinating in this broth for a long time by the time it reaches you. And so anyway, I hadn't been drinking any alcohol because actually most people drink hot tea or even just warm water over in China. They're not really drinking alcohol during the week, which is to be commended. And so I had the duck foot, proceeded to eat it. It wasn't going anywhere fast. So I then chased it down with a swig of beer, thanked my hosts for the experience, and said, I now want the boneless, skinless chicken breast that I'm used to back home. Thank you.
I've read many accounts of people in Silicon Valley. Like, it was 5 or 6 years ago that everybody was doing tea. They would go to China and do these almost like pub crawls, but it was for tea. Uh-huh. And it's always sounded fascinating to me. But then I've always had that kind of moment of, okay, if I went, would I be in peril? If I didn't have lots of people around me. So I find that fascinating, and it's interesting to hear. And I was never a big fan of duck to begin with. My mother loved chicken feet, so I'm familiar with those.
Yes.
But probably not cooked as expertly and the
probably
like from China.
Not. So I will yeah. eat those again though if they're offered to me. I'm not rushing out to buy it from any supermarket here in Massachusetts where I live.
Or recreate it. Yeah.
I'm happy to kind of live with the memory for now. But it was very, very tasty. And indeed there were plenty. I won't bore everybody with the details or horrify them with the details of other things that I ate. Suffice to say, they are not things that you'd find on any menu in any Chinese restaurant in the US. So clearly, the Chinese restaurants that are stateside have westernized the menu to suit the palate of Americans and indeed Europeans that go out to eat that food.
These are the type of conversations that David and I have had over the years, and it's always good to get him in front of our microphones and be able to go a little bit beyond the old product lines. David, before we roll away for other parts of this program, is there something that we didn't cover, or is there
just
things
my contact,
that people can go
just,
to?
Just the contact info, okay. Joe. So I mentioned the web address earlier, but let me just say it one more time. The web address is ZoomaxUSA.com. That's ZoomaxUSA.com. And our toll-free telephone number, if anyone would like to call and speak with me, is 866-296-8388. Again, that's 866-296-8388. And my name is David Bradburn.
And he's always at some of the major conferences, and make sure you go up to the table and get your hands on these devices, because that's the best way to be able to experience them, just like a Braille display. It really does matter on the individual. So you can hear about this on our program, of course, but make sure you go and see one in person to make sure that it's right for you. So David, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it, my friend.
My pleasure, Joe. Have a great day.
I not only coerced Jamie into coming onto the program to co-host with me, but I also coerced him into talking about a tip because, well, I don't know. It just seemed like the right thing to do. Just, hey, Jamie, you got a bunch of knowledge. Let's share it with people. So what kind of tip you got for us this week, my friend?
Well, in this week's tip, we're going to talk about the Braille Note Touch a little bit. I was working with a lady on using the Braille Note Touch recently, and she was signing on to eBay. Actually, we both were kind of playing around because when I think it was her email address that she was trying to enter, and for whatever reason, the touch wasn't moving into computer Braille like it was supposed to, because you have to use computer Braille on email addresses and some other things. And at the time, I was a bit stumped and realized later, and I was a little red face when I finally actually realized this, but you can manually switch the touch to computer Braille. You know, you might be using Unified English Braille and be like, I think I know how to do this computer stuff in UEB, but I know how to computer Braille. So even if it didn't automatically switch you to computer Braille and you chose to do that, you might want to. So all you got to do is I'm right now sitting in a document. I have speech off because you don't need to hear it. It doesn't really matter. If you do backspace with the letter G, which I guess would be the grade of Braille that you're changing, then you go to computer Braille. And that's awesome. Now, the not-so-awesome thing when you're done is, oh, how do I get back? Because if I do backspace with G, since .7 is a capital in computer Braille, at least on the touch, then when I do backspace G, I just am putting capital G's in my document. How do I get back? Well, what you do is you add the space bar or the space key with the backspace. So backspace, space, and G will take you back into literary Braille. So a quick way to access computer Braille anytime you need it, and then the little tip on how to get yourself back where you want to be when you're done. And that's my tip for this week.
And I'm so glad Jamie is an author, because he'll actually have to write a quick sentence or two for show notes, because yeah.
Okay.
Or I'll have to transcribe you very, very slowly when this gets to final edit. Oh man, thank you. You don't know how many times sometimes you have a pile. JJ and I both will have piles and tips, and we'll look at them from week to week and go, why did I think that was good then? It's not good now. What was the point of that? You know?
Right.
And then it becomes a Google Home tip. Almost always. It always becomes a Google Home tip.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
You know, one of the things that we heard from convention was JJ, and he brought us a lot of the ACB information. Chancey brought us a lot of the NFB information, our sound off this week, because we're running a little long because of the interview. We'll just highlight this one this week. Janine Stanley, you know that person. You might be familiar with Janine. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a program, some about menus.
It's a mainstream
menu.
That
doesn't sound right. Janine writes in and thanks us for having an interview with Roughware, and actually gets into a little MacGyvering here about what she has used and how it has worked for her as far as grips are concerned on her harnesses, and goes into a bit of a discussion here in the email about what is good about these new harnesses. And it's actually very descriptive. So definitely check out the show notes for Janine's comment about Roughware. That was really one of my favorites. Chancey interviewing Roughware to get an idea of what was going on. Also Wayround. A lot of people responded on Twitter, Alex Hall and others, about Wayround and wanting to try out that. And they've been featured on a couple of programs. I think Eyes on Success and a few others, maybe even Blind Abilities has featured them. So definitely do a little lookout for that. And I'm interested to hear, for those of you who are going to go get the starter pack, what you like about it. I mentioned this to Ricky, like, as I was writing the notes back at convention, because I thought it'd be great for clothing and just being able to quickly know what suit goes with this. There was an old thing, and I make this reference all the time, and not everybody gets it because Joe is, you know, older now, and he makes older references that most people don't get. But Sears had a clothing line called Garanimals, and Garanimals were clothing that kids could match. So they could match the, you know, purple hippo with the purple hippo, or the green elephant to the green elephant. So if you ever hear me say Garanimals, this is what I meant. And that's kind of what this reminded me of, is I can match this to this and not have to worry about that. Because, you know, for people who are low vision, low light scenarios are just as harmful into dressing colors and style. So if you wanted to get dressed in the morning and you wanted to be really quiet about it, but you weren't really sure if that navy went with that black thing, you know, as far as socks or shoes or pants are concerned, this would be a great way of slipping in some earbuds and finding out what clothes is which. Had you heard of Wayround before the summer?
I hadn't, actually. So really interesting stuff. Like you say, a lot of great coverage, and it's, I always look forward to convention coverage. Even if you don't get a go, then you get to sit back and just be there. It's really, really cool. And what stuff?
I felt weird taking your style, you know, because this was traditionally your thing, sitting in the catbird seat, watching everything come in and come out. And I was just like, wow.
Isn't that interesting, though? Isn't that fun?
Oh, and it was neat to be on the, as you've put it, and I borrowed it, the fishbowl outside looking in. Because it's a whole nother way, because you get to see the you know, what people are saying online and the reaction to it as it's happening. Whereas when you're on the ground, you really don't know or even have time to check in, as Jamie knows from the past, where it's like, yeah, I'll look at that later. Gotta go over here, talk to these people. So next year, have you thought about Vegas or going to Rochester? I know it's a year off, and I'm
not
holding
it. I would love to do now which one is okay, so ACB is Rochester, right?
And if you go to NFB, you don't have to go back to the hotel with the bed bugs in them. So you don't have to go back to the rear Viera as you had before.
Yes.
Important. Yeah.
That's a thought.
So, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Anaheim, that's going to be the one that's going to be really interesting.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah. I would love to do
Shadow.
I'd love to do
of the Mouse again. House.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. You might find yourself singing a tune as you often do this particular one. I held back for Jamie because I knew Jamie would be co-hosting with me, and I knew as a musician he would adore this clip from YouTube. Patrick, play just the beginning of this.
You may recognize the song being played as All Star by Smash Mouth, and if you do, something amazing is about to happen. Even though only piano notes are being played, if you know this song, you'll start to hear the lead singer's voice and the words being sung. I swear, what you're hearing is 100% digital piano, simply matched to the frequency of the original song and not mixed with real vocals. And yet, you can hear the words.
So All Star is a song that's actually featured on this section of the program a few times in its 153 episode history. But this time I thought it was really interesting about how sound tricks your brain. I tweeted this out during convention. This was actually in the middle of our coverage, and I threw this out there in my Twitter feed, and a lot of people responded to it and were just tripped out by the auditory trickery. I don't want to say hallucination, but it was definitely something that kind of fills in the blanks, if you will. Kind of low vision people do this, by the way. When they look at something and they don't completely know what it is, the brain tries to figure out what it is and will, you know, phantomly put things in, probably for the worse. Can happen with steps and the like. But this is like an auditory version of that. What did you think of this clip?
It's really cool. I mean, yeah, it's pretty awesome. If you kind of think about, remember those Blind Cool Tech days when Larry was crossing streets and there was this discussion of, can you really hear front to back with just two microphones? And a friend of mine, Stan Hendricks, wrote in and said, actually, your brain, just what you said, your brain fills in gaps. Your brain does stuff. There's a famous Mannheim Steamroller clip that is Carol of the Bells, or it's not a clip, right. It's the song. And right. The first is dum, bum, 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 bum. Can't believe I just sang on the podcast. And the second one is dum, bum, 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 bum. You hear one in one ear and the other in the other ear. When you hear them together, it's bouncing back and forth. Both of the melodies, neither one of which is the actual melody, form the melody of the intro to Carol of the Bells.
Trippy.
It is.
I love stuff like that. That is.
Yeah.
And I remember that was the phasing and the like was something that they were doing with the surround audio on Papa Sangre. We got into a great big conversation about that years ago at another place about how amazing it was that they were able to really kind of simulate the sound behind you kind of thing. And did you ever hear Virtual Haircut? That was one that we used to play in the state all the time when I was at the Division for Blind Services in Texas. The Virtual Haircut was this binaural demo of the technology where you're actually having a haircut and it sounds like it's really close to you. If Patrick doesn't have it, I'll have to put that into the show notes because it's cool. Kind of trippy. Yeah,
I saw a tweet from Brian Smart today about an app, an iOS app. I downloaded it. I haven't played with it yet, but it has some binaural sounds. Apparently, voiceover accessibility isn't great, but it's doable. So I may I'll give you a link to that as well if you want it.
Awesome. Just,
yeah.
Can never hurt to have more resources here on the program, and it can never hurt to have my good friend Jamie Pauls back with me. And I've already told him he has been, well, commissioned, is not the right word, threatened? Yeah, threatened that he has to come back for the Apple rundown in September when we get all the new hardware announcements. So he can corral me and keep me from saying silly things about iPhone X. That's going to be
Yes, indeed.
I imagine so. Okay. And probably talk me down from upgrading my Apple Watch. So that also may be important. Jamie, where can people find you, my friend?
Well, you can find me over at, believe it or not, still on Twitter. So twitter.com/JamiePauls, also on Facebook. You can email me, jamiepauls@gmail.com. So those are the best ways to get a hold of me. Oh, and go over to Access World. My goodness, yeah. How could I almost forget that? Well, that, I guess that's not contact info, but still, you can go over to Access World. So afb.org/AW, or just do a Google search for Access World, which is almost easier, honestly. And check out current issues. Check out what's going on. Sign up for the Access World alerts, but get the app as well for iOS. And read articles, and then you can leave feedback for me that way as well, and I'd love to hear from you.
And this is my go-to guy for most note takers nowadays, because that seems to be the beat you've been given. You were comparing Contrast Man for note takers.
I'm liking it. Scott Divert's doing Braille displays.
Are you going to get a chance to play with the Q Braille XL, Mr. Hymns guy?
I don't know about that one. I'm working with the Polaris Mini right now, so maybe once I get that get that done. Hey, why not? I'm for trying all of them. That's fun to me.
I called him a Hymns guy. It's you don't have a preference. It's just that for years, I always went to go to Jamie, and when we were actually doing QA testing, Jamie was my Hymns person. I would always make him do things with that. Hey, check this out. See if it works.
Lots of interviews too with those guys.
Oh, many. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Many. Yeah.
You can find me over on Twitter as well, even past the Tweetpocalypse. You can find me at twitter.com/RangerStation, all one word. You can also find this lovely program's feed, where you can find out information before it actually comes up on the podcast. It is your great way of keeping up on what's going on with Blind Bargains. That's twitter.com/BlindBargains. And of course, our sister site, atguys.com. You never know. JJ has been just pulling out crazy sales at different times. And, I probably won't be in trouble if I say that there's probably something in his sleeve already for Christmas. He's already that forward thinking. I'm just saying, you know how we have a big show in, June. We usually have a big holiday show as well. And if you're a vendor and you're interested in that, it's not too early to send us a line to see if you want to be a part of the big holiday show that happens around Thanksgiving. Just send us a line at feedback@blindbargains.com. And also, my thanks to Patrick Perdue for making us sound way better than we actually are. And my thanks to David Bradburn for coming on and talking about Zumax and China. Remember, you can go over to zumaxusa.com. Links in the show notes. And This flew by. I thought, I've been accused of having long shows when JJ's away, and it feels like we just sat down to record. It's over, Jamie.
I know. Wow. We'll have to do it again.
I agree. Totally. Okay. Let's see if we can sign JJ up to some more summer camps. I hope Jay is having a good time, and he'll be back with us next week. And until that time, I hope everyone also has a wonderful week, and we will see you again on episode 154. Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2018.